Mr. O'Sullivan, Rail 14. Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about your initial experiences as a prisoner, and you were describing the incident with the soldier with the two hand grenades. Was it? Do you think he was a forester, this man?
Well, I'm sure he was a forester, because there was all I think there was about 3 truckloads of us. Was nearly all foresters. There was no other regiment near enough to be involved with us.
Now, in your particular battle with A Company, about how many men do you think were taken prisoner at that stage, in your initial encounter with the Germans?
I should say there was about 25 of us, 25 to 30 of us taken down to that roadside.
And
but there were some men from other companies
within that group.
We were all foresters, but there was I think there was 3 wagons, and there might be 15, 20 men on the wagon. But they were all foresters, but they weren't all from A Company.
Could you hear was the battle still in progress at this point?
We could hear firing, and we could hear firing as we went towards the desert where they were taking us. I didn't know it was reserved to them, but when they were taking us forward, they took us to a big building, like an old school place or an old hospital or something like that it was. And we was always told, if you get captured, name, rank and number, you tell them nothing else. There's no need to. They knew who was in charge of the brigade, who was in charge of the different battalions. I knew the name of the officers in our company.
How did they make that clear that they knew that?
When we got to Bizerta, Tom was being interviewed by the officer, which he spoke excellent English, and he said, you've got the old phrase again, for you, the war is over. And then somebody said about, just give me name, rank and number. That was one of the NCOs from another company told us. And the officer said, we shan't require your name, rank or number, but we'd like to give you the information of officer, was the colonel in charge of our book. And he knew the officer's name, the major in front. They knew more about the brigade than we did.
And did they interview you individually or as a group?
Just as a group. Oh, he didn't interview us anyway. He just said, for you, the war is over. Any armaments, if you have any weapons with you, they must be left here. And we just went through into a big area. And eventually they brought us some drink and food. And that was it.
How did this officer strike you? Is there anything distinctive about him?
Yeah, his English was in. And he was relaxed. There was no bullying about him. He could have been an English country gentleman the way he talked to us and the way he acted. He was smart. He was well dressed in his uniform. He had his iron gold cross on. I think the Iron Gold Cross was handed out to everybody, the office, I don't know. But he really was a nice bloke, if you could say he was a nice bloke.
Now, what was your morale like as a group?
Well, we went, just after we'd met him, we was handed over to some Italian officer. Italian soldiers and officers, and they took us down to the dock area. And there was about, at this time, there must have been a group of 50 of us. And some of the ITI civilians, with the Arab civilians in Bizerta, there was a big fence where we were behind them, and they come to the other side of the fence and they were throwing loaves of bread over. And instead of catching it and sharing it amongst, we just fought like big animals for it, and most of it was trampled underfoot. the morale was absolutely flat, and that's I can, that's one thing I really remember. The whether it's eye ties or whether it was logs, but they threw this bread over to us, and we just fought for it. You know, everybody went, and it was, most of it was destroyed. If we'd have been sensible, or, you know, disciplined, we could have caught most of the bread and shared it amongst us ourselves, but we didn't.
Now,
well, with us at that time was our Sergeant Major. I can't think of his name. But he was in. Normally, we've come to a point where it didn't matter if you got 3 stripes on your back or 3, nobody took any notice of you. The NCOs had lost. There was no command at all. There was just enough men, privates, most of them were privates.
Were the NCOs and any officers, were they still with you at this point, or were they separate?
NCOs were, but no officers.
Were there any officers with you when you were captured? Or any officers in the group?
There were officers in the group on the trucks. And most of our officers were killed anyway. Of our air company.
You were just talking about that off the tape, and you think that that was the name of the...
Well, it definitely was Captain Cable.
And he was the man that was led the charge.
And he still didn't wear a steel helmet.
And was that true throughout the campaign, that he didn't wear a steel helmet?
He used to wear a flat cap. A stiff, you know...
Even when you're in the front line, in front of Green Hill and so on?
Oh, yeah.
He never wore a steel helmet?
This morning, the morning of the attack, he had a a flat cap on. I can see him now with his flat cap and, you know, the peaked, like a Salvation Army cap. But it was, I mean, there were some of them in the Army officers wore them as well. The young lieutenant had steel helmet on. But he hadn't been with us long at all. He replaced Machen. Machen went back to support group or whatever.
Just on the subject of that charge, the bayonet charge, you all had your rifles. Did the officers have rifles?
No, the officer had. One officer, Curley, had a revolver. The other officer had a revolver and some hand grenades. And the nearest we got to the top of that hill was when that lad was throwing hand grenades. And he got shot as soon as before Curley, I believe. But when Curley got shot, then we. And some of the other lads have been shot, we turn and come down to you. And that's when, and we did make for the cactus, for cover. And that's when Reggie Rose thought he'd been shot.
Now, I think you mentioned off the tape that there was a burial party sent back.
I'm sure there was. And because it was sent back from the first area where it was kept in, the big hospital sort of building, before we went down into Deserta, because Mayfield was still alive, what was the call in this? There were 2 Mayfields, as I said before. The older one was a cousin, he was still alive, and he went back on the burial detail, and they took. Well, they just said we all knew, and there was no officer went back on the burial detail. And whether, and all they had, all those, I saw Mayfield again later, all they did was collect the dog tags, bury them and collect the dog tags.
And that was on behalf of the Germans, of the German?
Well, the Germans took the dog tags, they handed the dog tags into the Germans, yeah. So the Germans would record them, I should imagine.
So who were you with at this stage when you, in your initial experiences as a prisoner? And you remember who you were with?
No, well, I was with Mayfield until he went back on a burial detail. And then, I don't know, I was with anybody. No, but I don't remember anybody in particular.
And what happened from that point on?
Well, eventually we were put aboard the ship. It was issued with two red dog biscuits. There was hardtack. was about 6 or 8 inches square, and the wear had. And we was on board this ship, and we kept, as we're sailing tonight, no, we can't, there's some British submarines outside. We're sailing tonight, no, there's some, and I think we was on board that ship for 5 nights before we eventually did sail, and we sailed to Sicily.
Now, before but we get to that...
While I was on board that ship, there was a lad called Rolls, and he was buying cigarettes on credit. He was some member of the Rolls Royce family, and he was buying cigarettes. He would pay anything for a cigarette. So when he was rolling the dust out of the trousers pocket into paper and smoking them, and a lot of them had dysentery.
And how many people were on the ship, do you think?
Oh, it's only 150.
And what regiments were they from?
There was definitely some Hampshires. I'm sure there were some Hampshires with us. There was Foresters. There were some DLIs. There was a few Lincolns. There was a majority of what I was with were Foresters. But there was all sorts in the... I mean, I don't know what Moby Holds was in.
What was you were on, I mean, and where were you on this ship? Where
in the, below us, in the cargo, in the holds, was light armoured vehicles, like Bengal, they weren't Bengal guys, but something similar. And then we were in the above them, below decks, we were below decks.
And what were the conditions like?
We were just... And a lot of them with dysentery couldn't get enough strength to get out of and to go to the toilets, because the toilets was, well, it was inadequate anyway for that number of people on board. But where they were suffering with dysentery, it was terrible. They just did it where they sat.
And was there any light in this hold?
Only daylight, if there was any daylight. You know, if it was during at the night time, it was just like a black wall of Calcutta.
And you were on this thing for at least 5 nights.
4 or 5 nights, yeah.
And what did you do? Well, how were you able, what was there anything to fill the time, or did you just have to sit there?
Well, you just talked amongst, you know, you could hear some people groaning and moaning, and you could hear Rose, you could hear him shouting, anyone got any bags? I'll give him £100 for one. But it was only a bloody credit, so I don't suppose he would ever get it. But I think he got repatriated eventually, I don't know.
Well, you're all NCOs and other ranks?
Other ranks, yeah.
So there's no officers mixed up on that ship? No. Were you able to talk to the crew?
Yeah, but they were Italian. If you was well enough, if you was able to walk, they would let so many out of you on deck, or to go to the latrines. Which was, just like a cargo ship. The trains, there weren't enough of them for all the people was on board. But they would let you up, and you could take water. You could take a bottle of water. You could get a bottle of fresh water and take it down with you for different food. Was just the attack biscuits we'd already been provided with.
So those had to last you the entire 5 days?
Yeah, because the idea was that when we got on board that ship, it was going to go that night, but it didn't. And we got back.
Now, you're on the ship, you had plenty of time to talk to each other. What was your people's opinion on what had actually gone wrong in the battle? Not just for you, but for the men from the other regiments and so on.
The biggest idea was that nobody seemed to know what was happening. Nobody on that ship who I talked to could give an explanation of how, where they were in a particular battle with in a time zone to correspond with our time zone. You know what I mean? When we were doing one thing, they didn't even know what we were doing, and we didn't know what they were doing. And we never attacked anybody apart from that bandit's camp. And the general idea was that it would have been another bloody ballsy. But eventually it proved wrong, didn't it? It worked out.
What did you feel about the Allied position in Tunisia? Did you feel that they were under threat, or did you feel it was just an isolated?
No, we thought it was under threat.
That the tide had turned, possibly in their favour.
The Germans was, see, because we didn't know enough about what we see. The biggest offensive was at the other end of Italy, of Africa, wasn't it? Coming out of Tobruk and up to that's where the offensive really was. And what they were doing, they were driving the Germans up against the First Army, and we weren't able to hold them because we hadn't had the experience of the Eighth Army.
Did you feel that was the problem? That was it a matter of that you hadn't didn't
we
have
didn't.
The battle experience?
We didn't have any battle experience. As an army, we didn't.
Was there anybody in the company in the that you knew that had experience before?
No.
That?
And I think that was the biggest trouble. The Germans was being pushed out of Africa by the Eighth Army, and they were coming against the First Army, which was a weak link.
Now, you're on the ship 5 days, then it sailed. Have you got any memories of the voyage across?
No, it was the biggest trouble was the people with dysentery and the stench, because once we sailed there was no way could we get on the bridge in the fresh air. We was down in the, and that's where it was kept until we got to Palermo.
What did you feel about the threat of kind of Allied attacks on this ship?
Well, this is what we were frightened of. You'd say, oh, it's a bugger if we get bloody sent with an English submarine. Because that's... there's always rumours, always, when there's a group of people who don't know anything. There's always somebody who'll surmise that this is why we're stuck here. I mean, I don't know whether there were any submarines out in the bay. There could have been. And I mean, that could have been the reason we didn't sail. But I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure that. But that was the rumour that went round the ship.
And did the Italians, did they give you any kind of instructions about what happened if the ship was hit?
No. There was no lifeboat. It would have been every man for himself, wouldn't it? And the Italians would have saved themselves first, obviously. No, there was no... It was just... Well, all these men in a boat, and we were going to... We didn't know whether... We knew we were going across some water. We didn't know where we were going. We thought we were going to Italy. But actually, we went to Sicily.
And that was Palermo?
Yeah, landing at Palermo.
Just describe that and the process of disembarking from the ship and so on.
The people with dysentery came off last, and there was put onto trucks. They were in the trucks to the camp we went to, and the rest of us who were fit enough walked. Because we had no kit to carry.
What did you have with you at this stage then?
All we stood up in.
No small pack out.
Nothing. Some of them had small packs, some had top coats, other coats, great coats. But all I had was what I stood in, was a battle dress and blouse, shoes and, you know, my uniform and boots. And that's...
Had you given any thought to the possibility of being taken prisoner?
Not really.
So you hadn't...
I mean, when we were in England, as I say, they gave us this instruction, if you're captured, you give name, rank and nothing else. And I mean, that was as much as we ever thought about being killed or not. And we marched to this camp, and the people on Sicily, and the Germans were filming us. And the trouble with people, if you march, if you're laughing, you're pleased to be captured, you're pleased. If you're looking miserable, you're looking sorry because you're losing the war. So there's no way you can win and the people of Sicily didn't like us. They pelted us with stones and fruit. They didn't throw fruit for us to eat, right? They just threw it for... And I think it was on Sicily about 2 months, I don't know. Really.
Where were they filming you? Where was
that? I was marching.
In Palermo?
Yes, yeah, we marched it up from the docks into Palermo, through the main streets of Palermo. There was a German cameraman with a camera, you know. I mean, there were big things in them days, weren't there? Big cameras. It was.
What was your reaction when you saw this camera?
Well, some of the lads says, don't smile at him. They'll think we're bloody happy for being caught. And then somebody said, oh, if you look bloody miserable, they'll say we're bloody beaten. And so we just marched and let him get on with it.
So what did you do when you saw the camera?
We just marched. We didn't take any notice. You couldn't win either way, could you?
So,
in the height of the Palermo buses, just some smashing looking women, really bonny and slim, but there was only the young ones. The older ones were fat, and you know, the mothers, the housewives, was fat and they weren't attractive at all.
So what was your reaction when you saw these young women on the street as you were marching through?
Well, they were covering us with stones and with oranges, and but I said they were throwing oranges at us for us to catch and eat, which some of them did, and the lemons, and they jeered at us, you know. And I don't know how long, actually, 6-7 weeks.
Could you describe this first camp that you went to?
What? Tents, all in tents.
And was that, where was it at in relationship to Palermo?
It was up in the hills, above Palermo.
So you had a march?
Up into the hills.
And how far was it?
I should think about 4 miles. Up in the hills.
And this was a tented camp?
Tents. And they had bunks. Double bunks, double tier bunks.
Were the people there already, prisoners of war?
It was an empty camp when we got there.
And about how many men do you think were in it?
Well, I should say there'd be a couple of hundred by the time it was finished, by the time we got. Because there was another ship came in behind us with some women on board. There were some Americans with them. And I met. Do you remember me telling you about an American who was trying to teach me about the German, the American way of betting on horses? I met him again in this camp.
Was he a black American or a white?
No, he was a white one. And he was.
What was your reaction when you met him again then?
Well, we were pleased to see one another. And it was on this camp that the colonel, the Italian colonel's dog, was killed and eaten. It was a corgi. And it was at this camp where they had a, I think, a mile of roadway. And you had to, during the day, you had to work. And they had like a stretcher. And they had enough material to do about 50 yards on this roadway, big stones, smaller stones, and then fine stones. And all we did the time we was there, we moved that 50 yards of roadway up that road and back again. You know, one day you'd sit late here, then you'd be picking the big stones up and taking them further up, and then there'd be somebody behind me picking the next lot of stones up, and that's what we did.
Now,
and they had a chapel. And bread. We got bread here from the first time we had any bread after being captured. It was like a small cob. And we got, every so often, we got some goat's cheese.
So, what was the, if you could just take us through a typical day in this camp, what time you got up in the morning and so on?
We got up about 7. There were no washing facilities of any. There was washing facilities, but not enough for the number of men who were there. So very few people got washed. And then NCOs went to the master baker or whatever cookhouse and they drew rations for the number of men in their tent. If there was 20 men in the tent, they got 20 cobs. And if it was a Wednesday, was a cheese day, they would get so much cheese. And it was thin, so there'd be a piece of cheese about that size and that between two of you.
Could you say that in dimensions?
Well, it would be 6 or 7 inches square and about a quarter of an inch, half an inch thick. And it was goat's cheese. Well, this is what they tell us it was anyway. And you got maybe get one between two. And you got one cob. And it was here where we found out that in our, there were two sergeant majors. One from our own sergeant major from their company. And another sergeant major from another company, Foresters. And they two went down to meet to get the rations for our tent. And the loaf seemed to be small. So we said to the, we were supposed to get a weight, so much weighing weight, but it was, the cob seemed to be smaller on these particular days. But we didn't find out until we decided to look in their vents. But they were getting it to weight. There could have been 20 men in the tent, but they weren't getting 20 cobs. Sometimes they were getting 24 cobs, or 25 cobs even. But they were only giving one per man and keeping the rest themselves. Until we found out what they were doing, and they didn't do it anymore.
So what happened?
Well, the first start, we stopped them from being our representatives at the collecting pool. And you took it in turns after that. Each two men went down. And nobody, the ITAR didn't disagree with it at all. The ITAR said, well, it's up to you. But they really did let us down, them two senior officers.
So how did you kind of reprimand them? What it's,
well, we finished all the bread and they didn't get any bread for the next 2 days.
And what was their reaction to that?
There were sergeant majors, and they thought because they were sergeant majors, they were still in charge. Which, according to the British Army, they were. And they weren't being honest. And I mean, if you've got 20 angry men, they're not going to stand for somebody loving them, are they?
And you had to share some of your rations with, you had to team up with somebody to do that.
Yeah,
with the cheese. Can you remember who you shared with at this stage?
Yeah, the two lads from Gainsborough, Rose and Lockwood.
And they'd been captured with you?
They were being captured. They were in different units. They were both in the Foresters, and they'd both come from the Lincolns. But they'd been in a different company in the Lincolns to what I was, and they was in a different company in the Foresters. And the only reason we got together was because we all come from this area.
Did they explain what had happened to them?
No, not really.
But it was a similar situation to yourself, yeah. Confusion and so on. So you got your ration of food for the day. What happened? What was the rest of the?
Well, it was on this road jump.
And then after that, how long would that take you through to?
All day, it was, that's it. And because all you're doing was moving 50 yards worth of stone work and that this roadway. And it was a continuous job. It never finished because they hadn't enough materials to make it. And it wasn't a road that went anywhere. It was just something that the colonel had devised, the Italian colonel, for us to do, to keep us occupied. And if you were on the small stuff, you had a shovel. There'd be three of you working together. The big stones was picked up first, and that was the worst job, because you had to sort of rock them to get them out of the loose gravel. And then they were put on these, they were like two trays, and they carried them forward. And then the fine stuff, we had a shovel between three. Two blokes carried the tray, and one bloke shoveled the stuff onto it.